The state recognises that by her life within the home, a woman gives the state a support which, with the common good, cannot be achieved. The state shall therefore endeavour to ensure that mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. So, my producer has mischievously included the question to the women here tonight that Regina, Verona, Louisa, the constitutional implication is there that you've all done your housework before coming to the studio here this evening. And I might say that producer is a woman.
Chance to be a finding.
She's clearly lining me up for a slap there. But Louise, to you first. The referendum to get rid of that clause that I've just read out from the Constitution, what's the plan for changing or doing away with it?
Yes, this kind of came out of the blue this morning. I think it had been spoken about for a long time, and I suppose when else to announce it other than International Women's Day, I suppose, was what the men in the government thought. So what's going to happen here is that they've announced this now. It's going to take place in November. So what's going to happen now is Minister Roger Gorman, who is the Equality Minister, his officials are going to go away. They're going to work on wording. They're going to see how many referendums are needed, because what they're saying is there could be an omnibus of referendums, because there could be a few different amendments that have to be looked at. So campaigning will start in September, and the actual referendums themselves will take place in November, which will be an interesting one, because there are kind of a couple of referendums that need to be looked at, such as the right to water, the right to housing, all these ones we've been told are coming down the track. Then the Taoiseach was on the 6-1 earlier, and he said he doesn't expect that any other referendums will take place that day. So it would be an interesting one to see how many people will go out on a cold, dark day, damp probably in November, to vote on this clause that doesn't really seem to have a major impact on any of our lives anymore.
Right. Regina Doherty, they can't be forced out to vote by economic necessity, presumably under this. But the symbolism, I suppose, this represents the era in which the Constitution was written. Do you favour its change, and what direct impact on the lives of women today do you think this constitutional provision has?
So first of all, I think it's more than just symbolism. It is a very, very clear statement of intent of an equal society, that men and women are equal. Colm, I sat on the first Citizens' Assembly as a new TD back in 2012, 2013, when 100, I think it was the first Assembly we'd had in a long, long time, 100 people came together in Malahide, and we discussed for months what should and shouldn't be done. And the unanimous vote on that was that we needed to remove that clause, and that was back in 2013. Charlie Flanagan brought a memo to Cabinet with wording, I think in 2017 or 18. It got scuppered because the then Women's Caucus in the Dáil didn't like the wording, and we had to go back to the table again. We then had the second Assembly on gender last year, and they gave us 42 recommendations. Arising from that, we established the Gender Equality Committee in the Oireachtas with Ivana Bacik, and we spent another 9 months talking about it. Women and men are equal, end of story. All of our policies in the rest of the country don't denote that, but the statement of intent has to be very clear in our constitution to tell our 90-year-old women that you were with this morning and my 16-year-old daughter that we expect women and men to be treated equally in this country. And thereafter, the 42 recommendations and the timelines that we put on as a committee, having sat for 9 months, need to be held to account by each individual minister to make sure that we have care, we have education, that we have business, that we have healthcare, all of the things that are unequal at the moment and that more often burden women than they do men, need to be rectified by changes in policy. And we've been talking about it for far too long, and that the society that maybe existed, if I can try and be kind and think that they put it in the Constitution in 1937 so that us women didn't have to go and work in a factory or clean somebody else's house. Today, women are wherever they want to be, and the society that we live in is still unequal. But if we don't have a statement of intent that everything else flows down from...
But you accept that opposition to change this may well come from people who believe that the fundamental unit of society is the biological family, and the values that were enshrined in the Constitution should still be protected.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be opposition, and I hope it will be a small element of society, because the fact of the matter is today that today's family is very, very different to the definition of the family in the Constitution. It doesn't reflect today's society. And it also doesn't reflect the fact that we should espouse, even though not everybody does and not everybody policy refers to that, women and men men are equal. They should have an equality of opportunity. They should have an equity with regard to accessing stuff that bears in mind that not everybody starts from the same place. But the statement has to be very strong in our constitution of intent, and I think that's why we need to do it now and not be talking about it for any longer.
Verona Murphy, have you felt the cold hand of this article of the constitution in your life, or do you think it's irrelevant, or do you think it should be retained?
Well, I fairly bucked the trend. I became a single mother at 23 and raised my daughter as a single mother. So I've never really lived under the constitution cloud. I would say this. The referendum is welcome. I spoke to an audience this morning of ladies up to 98 years of age, down as far as girls of 13. They welcomed, all of them welcomed the constitutional referendum. But I think the reality is much of the speeches in the Dáil today for International Women's Day, the common factor in all of them was domestic violence. And I think the referendum's not going to do anything to change that situation. And I think we have a mindset that we need to change about women and about gender equality.
Yeah, specifically, what do you see as the most problematic issue that contributes to the sharp end of that, namely domestic violence and sexual violence against women?
Well, there's a lot of factors, but one that's coming to the fore is actually the fact that we're unable to recruit Gardaí and we're not able to deal with it as an issue because we don't have enough guards. And I think one of the things that struck me lately is we're allowing, this is pertinent to a crisis for the future, we're allowing Gardaí. We're not bringing forward legislation to change Gardaí retiring at the age of, after 30 years or when they attain or reach the age of 60, right? Why aren't we now telling guards at 60 or after 30 years of service, you can now go to a desk job and we will release the able-bodied and those who need to be out on the beat and increase our workforce that way? Because we are in crisis with recruitment. We can talk about domestic violence for years, and we have been. We need a little less talk and a lot more action. And that's what being gender equal means to me on International Women's
Day. In terms of the constitutional language, Richard Boyd Barrett, that clause in the constitution, if it was to be put in a gender neutral term, people in a caring role in the home, should they choose to be in the home and provide that caring role, should not by dint of economic necessity be forced out to work. Is that aspect of it worth retaining in the constitution, that people who want to work in the home should be allowed work in the home and have the state support to do so?
Yeah, absolutely. But as long as it's not sort of gender roles that are specific and, for that matter, binary, you know, people should be recognised as human beings that are equal, whether they're men, women, or whatever gender identity they choose to identify with. And but I just want to talk about domestic violence for a minute, because the epidemic of domestic violence, I mean, there are a lot of complicated reasons, but there are certain facts that we do know. The vast majority of women who suffer domestic violence suffer it at the hands of their partners or their ex-partners or somebody they know very well.
Well, I'll just fill in a few statistics on this, because the women's aid statistics, and these are borne out by UN studies as well, and a recent study in The Lancet of 366 international studies. One in four women who have been in a relationship have been abused by a current or former partnership, and one in five have been subjected to intimate relationship abuse. Yeah. How would you tackle that? I mean, Verona's already dealt with the guards, but in terms of dealing with it at source or with other resources, what would your key proposal be?
Well, the absolute urgent one is to provide a way out for women in that situation, okay, so that they are not forced to continue to live with a violent partner. So that means you need housing alternatives available. So it's very closely linked to the housing crisis. Often people being in awful housing conditions actually exacerbates this. It doesn't excuse it, but it exacerbates it. We need the refuge spaces, which we are so far short of. I mean, we are signed up to the Istanbul Convention on refuge places, but there are 9 counties, including my own county, that has no women's refuge at all. It's absolutely outrageous. And I'll tell you an even more shocking story. I had somebody in my clinic in the last week who was in a domestic refuge, and she's now being evicted from the refuge because you're only allowed to stay there for a certain amount of a period. I mean, how shocking is that? Right.
Yeah.
So it is linked to the housing crisis and the lack of refuge places. There also, of course, needs to be, and this is where the referendum is not unuseful, there needs to be education about these things. Okay. If you perpetuate stereotypes about women having particular roles, lesser roles, domestic roles. And then, of course, that's not the reality of women. Needless to say, that creates the ingredients where you may get conflict. So you have to change those perceptions. And that means educating people.
I think that's why this conversation we're having at the moment about, you know, the sexual education in schools. Like, I'm 28. I'm not out of school that long. 10 years, say, not even. But like, I mean, I think about back about the sexual education I had then. And I mean this with no disrespect to my teachers.
Do you mind me asking, did you go to a mixed school?
No, I went to an all-girls school. And like, you know, you did a lot about the usuals, like STDs, contraception. But I feel that, you know, this conversation that's going on at the moment about consent and, you know, the online porn conversation about how young men should be taught that, you know, what you see is not right, what this is not right, that's not right, this is the reality of it. And I think that's so important. And, you know, that was 10 years ago when I was in school. We didn't have, you know, we did have phones, but we didn't have the access to the internet that we have now. I actually dread to think what's going on now.
How much of an influence just on the phone issue, the access to pornography on tap amongst your male peers or people who are younger than you, how much of a behavioural impact do you think that had during, say, your teenage years?
I think I was very actually lucky with the group that I associated with when I was younger. They were a good group of lads. But I mean, I think it's probably a lot worse now. When you hear of kids even being given phones younger, and we had flip phones and like we didn't have access to internet and all the kind of the rest of it.
But there's no great emphasis either, Louise, on parents being aware of what their children, we're not getting that type of education. We're just not getting it out there where parents are aware of what content their children are watching.
I think,
and I mean young children.
Yeah, but I think that's all well and good, but that's assuming that there is a parental figure and a parental influence in the home to have that conversation with the child. And I think it's actually worth thinking about that not everyone has that, and everyone has access to school. Most kids are in school. So I think, you know, that's
Do you think school would be, I mean, school is in competition with social media platforms. Do you actually think school would be an effective forum through which to engage people? Or do you think there needs to be some other way of accessing people?
I think it starts in school. And I think if especially young men, because, I mean, you read the statistics there about the amount of women who are in violent relationships. That's not to say that, you know, men are abused in relationships. Men are subjected to all this. Predominantly, it's women. And I think school is a good place to start it. But I think it's a general attitude. Like, I remember being at the launch of the third national strategy on domestic violence with Helen McEntee, and she was saying, you know, I can't insert myself in the WhatsApp groups, I can't be there on the nights out, this has to be a societal thing. And I think when better than to start this than when kids are young and when they're in school.
Yeah.
All right, Regina Doherty, on that point about the attitudinal issue, the thing that ends up at the point of domestic violence, or the thing that the attitudes that inform a less than healthy attitude towards consent, or no discussion of the ethics behind an industry like the porn industry that portrays women in such a way. What is the effective platform to do that, or what resources need to be put in place to reach people through schools, if it is schools?
Yeah, so I think it's twofold. It starts in the home, and then I think it definitely should be reinforced in the schools and not wait till we get to 14, 15. It should be started in a very age-appropriate way from a younger childhood. I think we've gotten so used to the casual, everyday misogyny. And I don't mean this to be disrespectful to any section of society. The types of environments that Helen is talking about, the jokes where lads have a clean WhatsApp group and a rude WhatsApp, like it's all the norm. But it's the casual misogyny that then leads ultimately, as each step you go up till you get to the ultimate, which is obviously domestic or sexual violence. And what strikes me is that when you have conversations with people, particularly with groups of men, they don't realise the everyday sexism, misogyny, sexual harassment, the list is long, that women have to put up with from all walks of life. I don't mean to be rude.
No.
We had a meeting last week with TDs and senators with regard to their safety and with regard to online abuse that they've taken. Why people are less encouraged to become politicians as women these days, why we're losing female councillors. And actually, some of the really surprising statistics was that when you put the statistics to men, they thought, no way, that's not true. That couldn't be true. And yet it is true. And so I don't know like, I can't think of any younger age that you start with is in the home to treat, you know, children to treat each other fairly and with respect. And definitely when you get to school, to talk about things in an age appropriate way, that saying casual things to people for fun isn't fun, you know, and that goes right up the scale of bullying. I mean, I think actually when we even get to social media, we've been talking about it for years. You have platforms that think it's OK to call the woman, a woman, the C word because it doesn't break their rules. Like, if that doesn't scream to somebody, and I don't know who the somebody is, that we have a problem, you know, with everyday issues long before we get to the very serious concerns that we have with domestic violence. And the one thing I will say too is that what's heartening in the last number of years, since the Gardaí have been retrained through their own new system to deal with women when they come, and men when they come with complaints and allegation of sexual violence, the numbers have actually gone up. Now, that's very disheartening in another way, because obviously it shows us the breadth of the problem.
I'll come back to you on that point. Richard Boyer, you wanted to come in at one point where I was talking about the attitudes.
Yeah, I just want to say that the other thing that is terribly important, though, is the question of objective sex education, which we're not getting, I think. And this is where it is linked to, in my view, to the separation of church and state, to having schools being mixed, where there is much more openness about teaching about sexuality, mixing of the genders at all levels of education, to break down some of the barriers and the stereotypes and so on that have formed the seedbed, if you like, of misogyny and sexual stereotypes. And to me, therefore, it is shocking. It is shocking that still a vast majority of our schools are controlled by religious organisations that have, to put it mildly, pretty conservative views about the role of men and women that reinforce a lot of the stuff that leads to misogyny. I'm not saying
although I'm sure there are people within religious-run schools who run, you know,
of course there are, and
workshops and
without a shadow of doubt there are.
I just want to come back to Regina Doherty on that point. It is heartening that people come forward and report, but I suppose where the rubber meets the road on that is the capacity of the DPP, the court system, the Gardaí, to ensure that complaints that are made are processed in a timely fashion, so that, you know, it goes forward for a fair trial where the witness is able to give their testimony in a way that doesn't contravene the integrity of the legal system, but in a way that at least gives a fair and efficient way of that complaint being brought to its logical conclusion.
So I'll say two things on that, if it's okay with you. One is probably isn't politically correct. I have a real problem with what we see in the papers week in, week out, are what I think are very, very lenient sentences for what I believe are very, very serious crimes. We are more or less telling women that the experiences that they have are kind of minute, you know, minuscule little things. And I don't think that's true, and I don't think that's the message that we want to give people. But we have a rehabilitative justice system that takes loads of things into account, but never really seems to take the victim into account. And to that end, for my very small little part, I brought a piece of legislation I worked on with the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre through the Shannon, and it's going to the Dáil shortly with Minister Simon Harris, to allow women of sexual and violent crimes, that when their attacker is being sentenced and trots in 14 of his mates from the tidy towns and the local GAA club, and sometimes even the local politicians or clergymen, to tell you how great a lad he is in mitigation for
that
the sentence.
They can be cross-examined, is it?
They will be able to be cross-examined, okay. And all references have to be given under oath, so that we do not re-traumatise women who are brave enough. And a lot of them don't, because of the way the system is so adversarial. But the ones that do certainly shouldn't be treated the way
you concede there are inefficiencies that we're about to see, presumably, and post the documentary, the doc on one Blackrock Boys, and this commission of inquiry that's going to be established by the state. We're going to see a tide of people coming forward. Mm-hmm. And are the resources there for those people's testimony to be treated fairly and efficiently by the courts and the justice system?
I think the mindset is changing. I think Helen McIntyre, before she went on maternity leave, introduced new training modules for our legal system, particularly for our judges, so that they are more considered, compassionate, more empathetic in circumstances, and that it isn't just the letter of the law. But also, like, to my mind, and I might be very old-fashioned, we can't just have a rehabilitative system. And I know we don't want prisons in every county in the country, but when somebody does something wrong, if we are going to have a zero zero tolerance policy, they have to be punished. I have to feel like, you know, as a victim, my life isn't the life that's been ruined. There has to be some solace in the fact that the person that has destroyed my life or your family's life, if somebody is not left behind, they've been murdered. They have to see, you know, justice being done. And a lot of cases, I don't think that we do see justice being done. And to my mind, a zero tolerance policy would be far stricter. We'd have far more minimum sentences, and we certainly wouldn't have the environment in our court system that seems to re-traumatise and put some of the victims on trial for being just themselves and having a particular kind of a life that they've had. They have to justify. It's not good enough.
I beg your pardon. I'm going to have to take a drink of water. Well, Ronan Murphy, do you want to come in on that?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree with Regina in that. I mean, I've had an incident in Wexford where a girl left Wexford with the clothes on her back to London. Such was her fear. And we ended up like, we had to ship two suitcases. We had to, it was with great pain that we had to go through to get her suitcases to her. And there was no prosecution.
No.
Of her abuser. Absolutely none. But her life was turned upside down. So I think we have to change a mindset. And I think the only way to do that is have effective punishments that send out a signal that this will not go on and we won't tolerate it. And until that happens, we're just going to see numbers increasing. And as our Gardaí and our Garda force diminish, it's going to get worse.